Welcome to Mental Healthy, where we share the stories and expertise of professionals working diligently in the field of mental health. I'm your host today, Dr. Kenyon Knapp.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mental Healthy Podcast. We're glad to have you here with us today. I've got some great guests with me today, Dr. Elias and Dr. Denise Mochino. And they're going to be talking about a fairly recent book they came out with called The Dream Home, How to Create an Intimate Christian Marriage. And a little bit of background on them before we get started. Dr. Denise Mochino, she teaches here at Liberty in the pastoral care and counseling department. And she has two master's degrees and two PhDs, which is pretty amazing. So you're going to get a really super brilliant conversation today. And then Dr. Elias Mochino has two master's degrees and a PhD. And they have degrees in marriage and family counseling and counselor ed and psychology and counseling, lots of different degrees. So they're super educated. And I should also let you know, too, that they have a YouTube channel called Motivation and Growth. And they have a lot of videos on marriage, mental health topics, relationships, spiritual growth, lots of different things. They're a really creative couple and do a lot of different things. And I know Dr. Elias Mochino, he also does work with GriefShare as well.
Yes.
And so welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. We are excited to be here.
Yes, thank you so much. This is exciting.
Oh, well, I'm happy to have you. I love creative people like you guys who come up with books and broadcasts and all different things like that. So let me dive right in because you've got a lot to cover, and I know you've done a lot with your book already, trainings and things like that. First off, I should ask you in a real open-ended kind of way, what led you to write the book, The Dream Home book, and what is the book about?
Good question, huh?
That's great. Well, I got into the marriage and family counseling field as a call from the Lord. I remember when I was 21 years old in seminary in Brazil, I was helping plant a church and visiting families, and I was visiting with a couple, mm-hmm. and they had marital problems, and they asked me to help them, and I was 21 years old, and I said to the Lord, Lord, I don't even have a girlfriend. I don't understand relationships. How can I help this couple? Mm-hmm. And through that journey, God put in my heart a desire to study marriage and family counseling. Ended up coming to the U.S. to study marriage and family counseling and working with couples and families in the professional counseling setting. Also through the church, I got a passion for marriage and family, and with a beautiful wife that mm-hmm. loves the Lord too. Mm-hmm. And we got together into this ministry with couples for many, many years. And then the book came out of that passion and desire to help couples.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and we understand that all couples want to have a happy family, a happy life together, the dream home. Mm-hmm. And so we see that even though that is the desire of their hearts, the reality is that divorce happens. And we see that about 40 to 50% of married couples in the United States divorce, and divorce rate for the subsequent couples or marriages get even higher. And mm-hmm. and that is a problem, and we want to contribute to the improvement of marriage.
Yeah, and we as we said, we came to the U.S. and we learned about this big concept of the American dream, mm-hmm. and part of the American dream is to have this dream home.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the reality of divorce and broken homes, broken mm-hmm. families, and we know that's not God's design. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so in our studies, and we said, okay, what can we do to help? So God mm-hmm. put in our hearts to write the book. And the book, we used metaphors,
mm-hmm.
and we love metaphors. We even did presentations at the AACC and VCA, Virginia Counselors Association, on how to use metaphors in counseling. And we know the Bible is full of metaphors and mm-hmm. analogies,
mm-hmm.
so we found a way to use metaphors to describe marriage.
Yes, and one thing that we love doing is taking walks together. And it was during those walks together that we kind of thought, oh, this would be a great metaphor. So we look at buying a house as one of the metaphors.
Yes. Yeah, we started with that idea, even the popular show, House Hunters,
yeah.
where the couple come together and they are talking about buying a house. So each person has a vision, an idea of what they want in a house. But in the end, they have to come together and agree mm-hmm. because it's just one house they're going to buy. So we began the book with that concept of a shared vision, that a couple needs to have a shared vision of what kind of marriage they want to have, what kind of couple they want to be. And then we use other concepts.
Yes, we do. And we look at the curb appeal as a metaphor for the testimony of the couple to his family, to the family, to neighbors. And so that's the curb appeal. There is a chapter for that mm-hmm. that we discussed.
And we talked about location and how important it is, the location of the home. And we use that to explain about the importance of having a biblical worldview. Mm-hmm. And we talk about location. We can talk more about that, but it's location. We talk about marriage. In the garden is God's design for marriage, mm-hmm. but then we live outside of the garden. But God's design for marriage is still the same. It hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. Jesus mentioned that design. Paul mentioned that design. And so that's how we approach the location. And then we enter into the house.
Yes, and we use the living room as a metaphor for communication. And communication is key in marriage. When you do not communicate well with your spouse, things will not turn out so wonderful. So here we have the living room, and we explore many aspects of communication. Yes. And
use Gottman research there when we talk about communication, what is the negative or the four horsemen of the apocalypse and how that's destructive to marital relationships. And then we talk about the kitchen and dining as we talk about feed the mind, the body, the soul, the relationships. It has an element of self-care. Couples are so busy nowadays that sometimes they neglect their relationship because they're going in so many different directions.
Mm-hmm. It sounds really holistic, but I'm also hearing over and over from you that the biblical perspective you come from. One of my next questions would be, how do you present a biblical perspective on marriage to couples? Like whether they already have a biblical perspective or not, how do you bring that in?
We're talking about how to create this dream home, but we're talking about Christian couples, so uh-huh. we are speaking to a Christian audience.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so we are talking about the concept of location. Elias was talking about this understanding of marriage according to the Bible, but also we are calling spouses to understand their location in relationship to Christ. Where are they in their relationship mm-hmm. to Christ? And we discuss worldview. Your uh-huh. worldview, if it is not, you may go to church, but you may not have a Christian worldview. And you need to understand what that means to have a Christian worldview, because that will influence your marriage and how you raise mm-hmm. your children and how you live your daily lives together. And we talk about husband and wives and how the woman complements the man. And you can expand on that.
And when we talk about worldview, we talk about it's the worldview is the lens through which we view the world, interpret reality, make sense of mm-hmm. life. Here at LU, I love that we emphasize the importance of having a biblical worldview. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, with people having different definitions of marriage, we want to emphasize it. In our book, we emphasize the biblical definition that God established in the garden. Genesis 2:24, a man will leave his father and mother mm-hmm. and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. That's mm-hmm. God's design, a man and a woman coming together mm-hmm. to experience this beautiful intimacy that is multidimensional. Mm-hmm. And we talk about that, helping couples understand that's God's design. It's a beautiful thing. It's to be enjoyed by a husband and a wife. And it's a covenant relationship mm-hmm. that God is part of the marriage.
Absolutely. Well, that's the subtitle of your book. You say, How to Create an Intimate Christian Marriage, this overarching idea that you have throughout your book. So let's explore that a little bit, the concept of intimacy in marriage. How do you describe intimacy per se? Because it's probably a word like love. You know, people could use it lots of different ways. Like, how do you describe it in your book?
We use a definition that we learned many years ago, that intimacy is to know and to be known.
Uh-huh. And I was going to say, I agree with you.
Yeah.
And it is a multidimensional intimacy in which you're talking about the emotional intimacy, the connection of your hearts, the intellectual intimacy, the connection of your minds, the physical intimacy, which when we talk about intimacy, that's all people think about. Oh, intimacy mm-hmm. means physical.
Yes.
No, it means more than that. There is the physical aspect and then the spiritual intimacy, the connection of the souls. And again, multidimensional intimacy.
Yes, and so when we talk about that, we also emphasize that intimacy requires self-disclosure and requires that people become vulnerable, willing to share at a deeper level. And so we talk about how communication is key for that intimacy to begin to take place and to flourish. And it's a sharing without the fear of rejection. Mm-hmm. That's becoming vulnerable. And we know the key element in intimacy is trust.
Yeah,
trust.
Absolutely.
The relationships require commitment. That's the element in the marriage. The man leaves his father and mother. And the word to cleave, to join his wife, is to be connected, to make that permanent commitment. And so that's what intimacy requires. Mm-hmm. And I liked the way Denise was saying that we talk about a connection of the hearts, a connection of the minds, a connection of the bodies, a connection of the souls. Mm-hmm. And in the book, we even emphasize this concept that we have learned through our studies that emotional intimacy precedes physical intimacy. Mm-hmm. And we know in counseling, when couples are having marital conflict, they are mm-hmm. fighting, they are arguing, they feel emotionally disconnected. Mm-hmm. And if they're emotionally disconnected, they won't have a desire to be intimate mm-hmm. because they are angry, they are frustrated, they are feeling maybe rejected by the spouse.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Now, sometimes some guys need to wash some dishes mm-hmm. to establish some good connection emotionally with the wife. Just mm-hmm. doing a few things in the house can be very helpful, too. And I want to say something about intellectual intimacy, because to be intellectually intimate with your spouse, you need to communicate well, as Elias was saying. And this intellectual intimacy, when I mention that to some couples, they usually go, oh, I never thought about that. So you need to talk, and sometimes that fear that you mentioned, that not trusting or fearful that the spouse will not accept your thoughts, you know, not understand your thoughts or think that you're not so smart.
Mm-hmm. We've met couples where they struggle in this area, mm-hmm. where maybe one person doesn't believe the other person is capable of doing this. And we've heard that, and we've been now in seminary and now LU and higher education. And we've talked to couples where we know it's a challenge to start a master's degree or a doctoral degree. And if a person doesn't have a support and encouragement from the spouse, it becomes even more challenging. And when they support each other, encourage each other, they are building and creating this intellectual intimacy, which feeds the other parts of intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've touched on a few things, too. Like you mentioned, like when the guy doesn't do dishes or help out in other ways. You know, I know that's the proverbial one, mm-hmm. but there's lots of other ways people can have conflict or, mm-hmm. or you brought up the whole thing about if they're further ahead with physical than they are emotional, you get problems there. What are some of the barriers you would say are challenges that a lot of couples face that impact their intimacy in a negative way? Because I know you all have done counseling mm-hmm. for years and years with couples. What are some of those barriers you see the most?
I would say the cell phone.
Okay.
Yeah, well, social media. Sometimes couples will be together, but they are not together because one is looking into Facebook, the other one is looking into Instagram, and there is no conversation going on, productive conversation.
Yeah, even in our book, we did research for the book. We found that, you know, there are positive aspects of technology and social media, but then there are also many negative aspects. And we found that research showed that Facebook has been, in the research, mm-hmm. one of the culprits of many affairs mm-hmm. and people divorcing a spouse because they found on Facebook someone from their past. Mm-hmm. And if they're struggling in a marital relationship here, it's easy for them to go on Facebook and find people from their past, and then they connect with that person. Uh-huh. And that social media misuse mm-hmm. can be very detrimental to the couple not communicating and growing. And there are many other things we talk about in the book.
I think also traumatic past experiences, we've seen that a lot, playing a role in intimacy.
So if people don't go to counseling to address those we call ACEs, the childhood
adverse childhood events.
Exactly. those experiences that they had in the past, but they haven't been to counseling to address those, it can impact negatively, especially if someone was sexually abused and developed those distorted views of sex, of relationship, of physical touch, because all that the person had was abusive. Then when they come into this beautiful relationship that is marriage, all those faulty cognitions will interfere with the enjoyment and the growth of that marital relationship.
Yeah, and I want to add that culture plays a role in that, in how often a couple or the husband or the wife will look for counseling, because some people will not share. That's not in their cultures to share about those aspects of their lives.
Sure. Well, I'd say before we go any further, I bet there's a lot of listeners who are going, this sounds great. It's holistic. It's got a Christian perspective. Mm-hmm. Where would people find this book if they say they wanted to buy it right now? Is it on certain websites?
They can find it on Amazon. And also our publisher is Kendall Hunt. Okay. So they can go to the Kendall Hunt website. And the book is there available. And it also has eight short professionally recorded the videos that we made as a companion to the book. So when they buy the book, there is a code that takes them to a website where they can watch those videos.
Great.
And we find it to be a blessing for couples who want to read it together. And then churches can also use it as some type of curriculum for them, or counselors can use the book as they're counseling a couple or even in premarital counseling, because it becomes almost like a guide for them to go in each room and discuss a specific topic of marriage.
Yes. And we have a final chapter in the book where we have a checklist. I think that's a great chapter. I like it a lot, because when you buy a house, you know, you always have to check, okay, how is the plumbing going? How is the roof? You're always checking, is the backyard okay? Do we need to new fences? Mm-hmm. And that checklist is exactly that. You're looking at your marriage and thinking, okay, what are some areas that I need to pay attention to? And that those checklists will guide you through those rooms again.
Absolutely. That's great. And by the way, I've heard you talk before. Don't you do some trainings around the country, or maybe conferences where you present your book to people?
Yes, we are glad that COVID thing is over, and we can travel and go to churches, and we do marriage conferences, and we love sharing with the couples. It's, we understand that marriage enrichment is not the same as counseling. We know the couples who are in a counseling setting, they are going through a crisis and they need help one-on-one, but we also believe in this, what we call psychoeducational, where we teach concepts and we teach skills in a very practical way to help the couples learn these concepts we are talking about here and how to apply to their marriages. So we love, and we do that in English, in Spanish, and in Portuguese. So we've done that even recently in all three languages.
Y'all, the whole package with all those languages.
We'll see about that. My Spanish is going strong, I guess. Still studying.
Well, that's neat that you can do all those things extra to help the listeners. But you mentioned some barriers so far, but let's sort of flip it around a little bit and talk about the positive side of building intimacy. What are some things that couples can do to achieve higher levels of intimacy?
Something that I love to say is that verse in 1 John 3:18, I'm going to paraphrase here, it basically says that love not only with words, but with action. So John is telling us it's all beautiful to say words, but he says love with action, or love in action. And we know that's what God did. We see in John 3:16, God loved us so much that he gave his son. So action. So I like to think that an emotional connection is created through behavioral actions. So yes, there is the concept of attachment, the psychological bonding that happens, but I believe that that takes place through the actions that husband and wife engage in each and every day. So it's agape love in action.
Yes, and I think as a wife, I have to always think, okay, how can I make my husband's day better today? What can I do specifically to bless him? And the same way, I think Elias has to get up in the morning and think those things. And if he does, and if I do, chances are we're going to have a better day, a better week, a better month. and many, many years together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we began, and it's not social exchange theory. I'll do this for you, you do this for me. But yeah. It's that agape love that the Bible teaches that is selfless, altruistic, mm-hmm. is about the other person. Mm-hmm. And so, as Denise mentioned, if I wake up in the morning and we help couples think that way, wake up in the morning with that thought. Mm-hmm. How can I bless my spouse today? Mm-hmm. Go through the day with that same thought, and then mm-hmm. at night, the same concept.
Yes, and you cannot give what you do not have. And when I say that, I mean, Christ is this embodiment of agape love. And if you have him, you will desire in your heart to show that love mm-hmm. to those around you. And your spouse is the person that's closest to you. So start with your spouse.
So we encourage couples with loving through actions. And the example Denise gave earlier, we know of the book, The Five Love Languages, that there are different ways to express love to uh-huh. people. So it's encouraging couples to find that meaningful way to do something that will communicate, I was thinking of you, I love you. And we say, give your best, not leftovers. Mm-hmm. Because as we mentioned, people get so busy mm-hmm. and something we also discuss in our book is the issue with becoming a child-centered couple. Because uh-huh. we know during the parenting years, we can get mm-hmm. so involved. We want the best for our children, but we can get in so many activities. And we've seen this. We've talked to couples. When they get home, they are tired. Mm-hmm. They are exhausted.
And that's not even good as you're moving towards becoming an empty nester. You know, as the kids are leaving home, you really need to start practicing being together without the kids. Well, the kids are still there. Uh-huh. So that when that happens, it's all good. You're okay.
Yes, it's not a crisis to be now just yes. husband and wife.
And another point, Elias, is prayer, praying together. Uh-huh. Sometimes when we are teaching and we ask the couples if they pray, they have the habit of praying together. Mm-hmm. Some of them, they will say, we pray together when we are about to eat something, but they do not have that habit or pattern of praying together in the morning uh-huh. or praying for specific things together.
What is it about that? Like when you're praying, I agree it's a real intimate thing, but mm-hmm. but what do you think it does within the couple relationship when they pray together?
And it's interesting. In the book, one yeah. of the parts of the house that we talk about is the closet, and we use that as a metaphor because even one of the translations says that Jesus mentioned, when you pray, go into your closet. So
that's
we use
right.
that as a metaphor for spiritual growth. Uh-huh. And the big word we used there multiple times in the chapter is together. It's praying together, read the Bible together, worship uh-huh. together.
Yeah.
Because that's how we believe the couple will pray together, will grow together. Now, if they don't have the habit, we encourage them to start. We start with even if it's a short prayer. And then mm-hmm. build on it.
Yeah, and biblically, the Bible talks about the prayer of two, you know. Mm-hmm. You come into, there is a lot of power in two, in coming together mm-hmm. that way. So, and your hearts, I mean, you have your hearts towards your children. And both of you together, can you imagine that kind of agreement being made?
Praying together for the children. And so, to create intimacy, we're talking about the behaviors. Uh-huh. We talked about this spiritual activity. And then we believe in something that Gottman says, research shows that couples who are happy or have strong marriages, they behave like best friends. Uh-huh. And so we've seen this in other research, that this friendship in marriage is so important. Think about a couple when they are dating. They go to the movies together. They go to parks. They do fun things together. And we say fun is not over when you get married. It should just yeah. grow and be even with more fun there because we say marriage is fun, part of being married. So we say, how do you do that? Well, be emotionally available to your mm-hmm. spouse. Be a fun person because we get so consumed sometimes with work or, as we said, with the home responsibilities or the children or the economy, finances. Mm-hmm. And then we go about the house and we are not being fun. Mm-hmm. And so we say, be mm-hmm. fun, be that helpful
be
person.
Caring and helpful, yeah.
Yeah, I can certainly relate to everything you're saying about with the kids and all, and that it can be your focus, or your careers can be your focus. But but what I love about your book, and when I was reading it, is you guys are not just all theory. You're about skills. Mm-hmm. And you've got a number of sections in your book where you talk about specific skills that people can learn. So let's go there for a second. What are some of the essential communication skills that you share with couples in your book?
Well, We talk about that living room as being the place where the couple comes home after a long day of work. They sit down, and we talk about the love seat. Uh-huh. That is a metaphor for that place where they will sit down and they will communicate. And we teach the speaker-listener technique, which mm-hmm. is a basic skills. When we have couples, and you've counseled so many couples for so many years, you know, they come in, mm-hmm. that breakdown in communication, they are attacking each other, uh-huh. speaking over each other, interrupting, doing all the negative things of communication. And so it's to help them learn to listen, how to be a listener, what do you do when you are the listener, and what do you do when you are the speaker, mm-hmm. so that you can understand each other in a respectful way with uh-huh. empathy.
Yes, and one time we were teaching a group, and we asked the couples to do just that. The wife would speak, and the husband would just paraphrase. Uh-huh. There was a husband who couldn't say a word. He just stood there, and we all started laughing because it was funny, because he was like, he couldn't say the words he should have said. So sometimes we assume that people are able to do those things because we do them as part of our work.
Yeah.
But sometimes it takes some practice.
Yes, and then we practice, we coach them, help them, because we want to make sure that when they leave a workshop or a marriage enrichment, some of those basic listening skills they learned, and then the homework is now put it into practice. And then we have an acronym to teach couples a concept that we learn about the different levels of communication, mm-hmm. and we call GIFTS, G-I-F-T-S, give your spouse gifts. And uh-huh. we call, the G is greeting, which is a superficial level of communication. It's uh-huh. just saying hello. Is that we see people in the hallway, hello, how are you doing? Fine, and very mm-hmm. superficial. And then we talk about the I for information, uh-huh. sharing information, F, sharing feelings, T, sharing thoughts, and each level you can go deeper and deeper. And then S is sharing yourself, becoming vulnerable, sharing those things that maybe a person wonders, if I share this, would my spouse accept me? Mm-hmm. Would that? How would he or she view me? So we talk about that, and we help them practice how to give the gifts of communication. Mm-hmm. So we like the levels of communication.
Yes, we do. And I have noticed when we teach these concepts, some of the couples, especially those who are very busy with kids, couples who have a marriage that is more child-centered marriage, they tend to stop on the information given, because it's all about, hey, I'm taking the kid to school right now. Hey, I'm going to stop at Walmart. I'm going to stop at a store. And so a lot of information going on, but the feelings are kind of back there and not being shared.
Yeah, and then with thoughts and with the self, that is when we may talk about a vision for marriage.
Sure.
That is so important, because you are going now to a deeper level of what I wish for our marriage, what I want to see in our marriage. So that is now a deeper level of sharing. And so we help couples go to that deeper level.
Well, I'm hearing that, like there's a building that goes on in this building. It's all about a house.
Yes.
But I mean, I hear though, like even in the concepts that you're talking about, it's building the relationship, but it's building it deeper. Mm-hmm. And you just mentioned the shared vision. Mm-hmm. How do you get there with a couple from, like, maybe they first come in and they're in conflict? How do you take them to that shared vision?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to say that if they are not communicating well, you need to start with communication and having them learn those skills, because they do need to learn to paraphrase or to reflect back on what the other person is saying, the spouse is saying. If they cannot do that, then they are not even, it's going to be, the road is a little longer to get to the vision part. But that's where they start. And it's so beautiful to see, you know, the smile on the wife's face or the husband's, like, she actually knows what I'm saying. And that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And we believe the concept of a vision is so important, because in Amos 3:3, I'm going to paraphrase here.
Sure.
The Bible says, can two people walk together unless they agree on the direction?
Uh-huh.
So marriage is two people coming together to go to a place or to be some kind of couple. And so we talk about that. And then there are different verses in the Bible about a vision in Proverbs 29:18. Many of our listeners probably have heard, where there is no vision, the people perish.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Bible, the concept or the word that is translated vision has also been translated revelation. So in our book, we talk about a vision as a revelation of God's will, God's purpose for his people. And so we talk about the couple coming together to create this shared vision. So it's not what I want, and then it just has to get along with my program.
Hopefully not.
or what yeah. she wants. It's they come together and they share. And it can be challenging because people have individual goals, aspirations, but now how do you combine them?
Uh-huh.
And so we talk about that, and we talk about vision in seven areas of life.
Yes.
We talk about the physical area, psychological. Physical is the physical health. What they decide on what lifestyle they're going to live.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully a healthy lifestyle. And then psychological is the mental health.
Uh-huh.
And we know how important that is, how they are going to take care of their mental health and ensure that how they deal with stress. And the relational, financial is so important.
Mm-hmm. And going back to the relational, you know, people like me from a Latino background,
uh-huh.
we have extended family. So that relationship is more than just with your spouse and your children. It involves your uncles and aunts and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be very active in your life. So how do you balance that to make sure that your marriage is intact and doing
yeah.
well, and nobody is coming to your marriage and trying to run your marriage
yeah.
in
and
a certain
we did do research with interracial, inter-ethnic couples
uh-huh.
a few years ago, and made a presentation at AMCA and then at AACC.
Uh-huh.
And we talk about with interracial, inter-ethnic couples or intercultural couples, the importance of this that is called intentional selective blending, which is how they're going to blend their two cultures into one. And we see the same elements of developing a shared vision, because you are bringing some part of who you are to form this couple identity, who we are going to be as a couple. And we know as Christ followers, we want to be a marriage that honors Christ, honors God. But how we do it is going to be unique for
mm-hmm.
each couple. So
mm-hmm.
we talk about all these areas with finances and what is the goal. Do you want to be a couple that is debt-free?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to be a couple that honors God with your finances, then professional life, recreational, and spiritual? So it's in all areas, but then also through the life cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yes, through the life cycle, because couples are at different stages. Some couples just got married, so right now they are trying to bond, to become one flesh and to know each other really deeply. But then when you have a child, now it's all about what? Caring for that child. But you have to care about the marriage and the relationship and all that is involved. And when you have teenagers, what
yeah.
happens?
It's parenting is a big deal, but there is a change
uh-huh.
because with little children, you're more in control. It's more teaching, but with adolescents, some people say it's more coaching now.
Uh-huh.
And then get to the launching stage that they go to college. They are becoming adults,
mm-hmm.
so you are helping them. And then we talk about, Denise mentioned, becoming empty nesters, that revisioning, if you will, because the vision that they had early on in marriage, now they may adjust
uh-huh.
because they are coming to
mm-hmm.
eventually retirement. So we say help the couple imagine their marriage 5, 10, 20 years from now. We borrow from Steve DeShazer, the miracle question from
uh-huh.
Solution Focused, and we adapt that miracle question to imagine there is a miracle and you are 5, 10 years in the future and you have the marriage of your dreams. What does that look like? What are you doing? What conversations
mm-hmm.
are you having? What are people seeing in you as a couple? So it helps people to
mm-hmm.
begin to describe the marriage
yeah.
that they want.
Mm-hmm. And then you talk about looking upward and inward and outward and forward. And those concepts are interesting to share.
Because look upward is we look to God because a vision is a revelation from God of his will for us. So we have to ask, what is God's will for us? What does he want us to do as a couple and to be as a couple? And look inward is what gifts and talents God has given us that makes us unique to serve him and to serve one another. Mm-hmm. And then look outward. No man is an island. We are part of the body of Christ. And so we have a community of believers who can also help us in this process. And we look forward. We like to think of a bright, better, bigger future that God has for us. We know ultimately God wins, Jesus wins, but we know in this life here we have struggles, as Jesus says.
Yeah. You know, there's so many verses you're making me think of when you all speak, because you're mentioning so many biblical concepts. Like 2 Corinthians 6:14 talks about being equally yoked. And a lot of people, when they quote that, they're just saying, oh, only marry a fellow Christian. But when you look into that verse and you really exegete it, which you, you both being having seminary degrees know well about, the analogy there is of, you know, two oxen pulling something. And if they, unless they're pulling in the same direction, you know, there's just all this resistance and you don't get very far. But what they're really talking about in that verse is having a shared vision, exactly like what you're just saying. And so, you know, if unless you're pulling together, you're not equally yoked.
I appreciate you bring that up, because I always think of agreement as really a key ingredient for a marriage to succeed. You have to agree and really walk together.
Absolutely. Well, let me quote you from your own book, because you guys have such neat little pithy ideas in the book. And it goes along with that whole metaphor that you're using about rooms in the house and stuff like that. At one spot, you say, what happens in all rooms of the home influence what happens in the master bedroom. Could you all elaborate on that a little bit?
As we were saying, different rooms are used as metaphors for different areas of the relationship. So we use the master bedroom as a metaphor for intimacy. Because we know it's easy to connect with couples that way. But what we say is, for us who study counseling, is that systemic view of marriage. Marriage as a whole, meaning all areas of the relationship influence each area. So intimacy is going to be influenced by communication. So the communication, we say, is the living room. Well, what happens in the living room is going to influence the master bedroom. If the couples are having problems, finances, for example, and we found research that says the higher the frequency of arguments about money, the higher the likelihood of a divorce, because money fights are pervasive.
Yes.
And so if they're having problems in the home office, it's going to impact their intimacy. So we are talking about that concept of all these areas of marriage. We need to focus on all of them and address all of them, be careful with all of them, because they are building and creating that atmosphere for the couple to express that love through the physical intimacy.
Yes, and the good news is that forgiveness is the healing element here. So there is no perfect marriage, and the dream home is a dream home that we can just place before God and say, this is what I would like for my marriage. But we are not saying, look at the dream home. This is us. We are not. We are desiring that dream home because God allows us to dream better things for our marriage.
Yeah. You know, I love that you use that systemic approach to therapy with couples, because I just think about over the years, like when I've done therapy with couples, sometimes, you know, one person will come in and all they care about is the sex in the relationship, or another one, all they care about is the money or whatever. But when you connect it all together, like you just did, about the systemic, the way all the rooms affect the master bedroom, it probably creates motivation in some clients to not just care about money or sex or whatever.
That's a great point there. Thank you.
Well, you mentioned earlier that you lead some conferences, marriage conferences. And I know probably some people would love to book you after hearing you speak today. but let me ask you, if you did a typical dream home conference, what would that look like if you traveled somewhere?
And we like to talk to the pastor or the person who is leading the conference or organizing it to hear their vision or idea or expectations, what they hope to see happen. But usually when we talk, it's doing a two-day event, let's say, start on a Friday with a romantic dinner, and the couples come in, and if the church can afford and host a nice dinner for the couples. So that is creating an environment where they're going to feel good being with each other, enjoy that moment. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about teaching, but it's creating an experience for the couples. And it's like they drop the guard. Here I am now with my beautiful wife, with my strong husband.
And the church provides childcare.
Oh, so that's a good one.
There's that peace of mind about where the kids are.
Absolutely.
That's really important
and
for
so
us.
Usually on the first session, we talk about how to create a shared vision for marriage. And we explain the concept of the dream home, but we talk about the creating a shared vision. And then we do, let's say, three more sessions on Saturday. The church provides a breakfast if they can. And then we do communication. That's one session. And then we do the
conflict
laundry
resolution.
Room, which is...
Conflict resolution. Yeah. The laundry room is the metaphor there for that
clean
chapter.
Clean up conflict.
And people love that.
Oh, it makes sense.
Yeah. And we say, don't air your dirty laundry on social media. Mm-hmm. You do it at home. So it's how do you do that? So we share skills on how to handle conflict effectively. And then we have one more session on the master bedroom, on intimacy, and we cover as much as we can about intimacy, have a chance for Q&A, and not raise your hand and so people know who is asking the question, but we say, write on a piece of paper, no one knows who is asking the question. Some questions that people say, hey, finally I have someone here that I can ask.
Sure.
And not that we have all the answers, but we can maybe guide them to resources.
Oh, I mean, we've been doing this for years, though, so it's probably a great setup for them.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, so it's about a day and a half conference normally.
Yes. If they want to do just one day on a Saturday, we're flexible.
We've done it before, just one day. And sometimes the pastor feels like the church needs more teaching, more help in parenting. So we switch some of the sessions. So it depends on what the pastor's heart is.
Or the needs of the church.
The needs of the church.
Well, let's just say there's a listener out here right now going, this is great. This sounds awesome. I'd love to have this at my church. What's the best way for listeners to reach you?
Well, they can contact us via email, and I'm going to give a personal email.
Okay,
here.
Sure.
It's Elias Moitinho, ElIasMoitinho. They may have to listen to it again. My first and last name at hotmail.com. They can email us. They can email me at my Liberty email. It's ElMoitinho 2 at liberty.edu. Or they can go to our YouTube and website.
And Instagram too.
Yeah. Motivationandgrowth.com is our website. They can go to our website.
Great.
And can reach out to us and go to our YouTube channel. Or DM us on Instagram. We have an Instagram.
Yes, we would be glad to hear from anyone. We are super excited about helping, and we love the church, the local church. Our hearts are in the local church.
Exactly.
Yeah, lots of different ways to reach you. Now, we've talked about your conferences, but I've heard you speak before as well that I know there's lots of other ways that individuals or churches could use the book. So could you elaborate a little bit on that of how they might use it? Like, if let's just say they may not have the facilities or the time or whatever to do a conference, what other ways could they use the book?
Okay, well, we think our book would be a great resource for, let's say, a marriage ministry or a marriage class. And they can use, let's say, 12 weeks. And they can start with the book. And each week they study one chapter. And they will cover each week one concept. And it's very practical. And it's biblically based. And as we discuss here, there are many practical skills that they can learn. So that's one way. A small group curriculum. they can do, as we talked about, marriage conferences or marriage enrichment or marriage retreats. Uh-huh. And
they can do that on their own, too. They don't need to have us to teach. Somebody may want to read the book and gather the information and present it on a day or so.
Yeah. We know of some churches that they got the book and one person had the book and use it as the curriculum, if you will, to teach the concepts to the class. And if people who are listening out there who are in, let's say, in Christian education, maybe they are looking for a textbook for a marriage class, that they want a book that brings a Christian worldview, we think our book does that. It can be a supplemental textbook to a book in the marriage and family counseling class.
That's great. I mean, yeah, I think even about book clubs, too. Like, I know my mom and some people I know, they get a bunch of friends together and read books. This would be a great setup for that as well.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, so you've got lots of different applications of this, and you've really operationalized it in so many ways. But I have to say, too, before I wrap up, I always try to ask all the people I interview just a catch-all question. What have I not asked you in this interview that you came in here today and wanted the listeners to hear about?
Well, I just want to make sure that they know that the book is also in Spanish.
Oh, really?
So the book is in English and in Spanish. It came out in Spanish 6 months after we wrote the book.
Okay.
And yes.
That's really helpful for all.
We do a conference in Spanish, too. If someone of our listeners, they know pastors and churches that are do Hispanic ministry.
Or Portuguese.
Yeah, they can reach out to us and we'll be glad to help them. Anything else you want?
Well, I just thank you so much. This has been fun.
Oh, absolutely. I love hearing about it because, I mean, you have a great product here that's going to help a lot of people, and I know it already has.
Well, we're excited about it. If you are into YouTube, go to our YouTube channel, Motivation and Growth, and we have videos there that we share in small bites. It's a great resource for couples in the different topics you already mentioned here, especially marriage. And we think it's going to be a great resource for the couples in your church.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, thank you for being on the podcast today. I appreciate it. And once again, everyone, this is Dr. Denise Mochino and Dr. Elias Mochino, and their book is The Dream Home, How to Create an Intimate Christian Marriage. So go to all those websites they mentioned and check it out at Amazon and other websites and get a copy. And I know it'll be a blessing to you. So thank you so much for joining us today on the Mental Healthy Podcast, and we'll be with you next time. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Mental Healthy. Please be sure to subscribe for more episodes and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. You can find this podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms. We hope you join us next time for more on Mental Healthy.
Music for this podcast is licensed under Creative Commons by Excel Music Publishing at freemusicpublicdomain.com.